Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts. And today it is my pleasure to have a repeat offender on the podcast. Chloe D'Souza. Chloe is a love, sexuality, and relationship coach. She has over 20 years of experience in intimate and therapeutic space holding for people one-on-one and in groups. She helps her clients fully embody their desires in the realm of love, sex, and relationships. As a certified love, sex, and relationship coach of the Tantric Institute of Integrated Sexuality, Chloe offers a trauma-informed approach backed by both modern science and ancient tantric wisdom. With over 20 years of intimate space holding and an accreditation as a five rhythms teacher, dance movement psychotherapist, her body-based background is unlike any love, sex, and relationship coach. Chloe's work with her clients combines holistic practices such as mind-body mapping, breath work, meditation, and energy work, such as sounding, an ecstatic dance to bring your wild back to the bedroom and the hall of your life. Chloe, welcome back to the Teaching Journeys podcast. I've been looking forward to our conversation for a while now.
Thank you for having me back. It's great to be with you.
We had a great conversation the first time. I think we dove deep into what you do as a love, sexuality, and relationship coach. We talked about your work with clients, your approaches, how ethics play a tremendous role in your work with clients. And I think we just laid the great foundation for you coming back, and we're going to be delving into more aspects of what you do and what you have done.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So is there anything you'd like to say before we get started?
I'm super excited. Just so you know, Dave's prepared some really great questions, and we're going to be talking about sovereignty as well as sex today. And go into a container that I held and a live discussion around that.
Yeah, that I'm looking forward to that aspect of our conversation. But before we get into that, for those listeners who didn't catch the first episode, tell us who Chloe D'Souza is and what you are doing to improve the lives of those who request your services.
Yeah, so I've spent 20 years professionally studying the body. The body's like my canvas. It's my area of inquiry. So what I noticed, and what me and Dave covered in the first podcast we had, was a lot of Bessel van der Kolk's work on how the body stores things, but also how to integrate what the body stores, which is the real essence of my work. A lot of people don't have places to go when it comes to how they relate to another person, particularly your significant partnerships. All your stuff comes up. So when you delve into the nervous system and you delve into the body with what's stored there, you can start to digest the really tricky, sticky, icky stuff. And then you find that those patterns don't occur. So with the release of dance and my journey around dance and the body, I was already discovering that, because when you give your body a chance to move and purely express what's there, ultimately you end up integrating what the body has stored. And then you add sexuality and relationship to that, and you have a very deep body of work, which is really juicy. So I can work in groups or one-to-one with people over this. And some of it is dropping into a more meditative state in order to find out what's in the nervous system. We get very hung up on cortical answers. So that's the brain. The mind tells you, this is my story. And actually, when you drop into the body sometimes kicks up a different story, or it aligns with you. So you want that mind-body intelligence congruent, if you like.
And depending on the intensity of the trauma, a lot of individuals aren't in a position to talk about it because the part of our brain that's responsible for verbalizing the trauma shuts down when we're re-experiencing that trauma. I've always liked the option of movement and dance because it's been proven to be therapeutic in so many different areas in terms of self-esteem, in terms of releasing trauma, in terms of being less conscious of your body. So I think what you do is important. I think it's a great complement to talk therapy, but talk therapy by itself, and we're learning this more and more, doesn't even begin to cut it when it comes to help individuals manage through trauma and have a different relationship, you know, with their past experiences.
Yeah. And a lot of the cultural and social messaging we pick up, the body is absorbing as well. So around a topic like sex or how to have a certain relationship, you've kind of absorbed with your body and your mind what you should be doing. And so a lot of my work starts to unpick some of that. And equally with, you know, the pre-verbal stuff or the stuff you can't really talk about because you weren't verbal at the time that it happened, it's lifting those lids very subtly so that you can be in control of the direction you want to head in and unpack your journey at your own pace. But also it becomes very exciting because for me, I love to help people move out of the victim narrative, which is an important part of the journey, into an empowered narrative where they become the heroine or the hero of their own journey. And in fact, you know, Dave, you're a great example of that, and so am I. It's like we've got trauma in our pasts, and it really hurt, and it still does hurt at times. But also we've turned it into something that's a soul journey, that's a teaching journey, and we've gone, okay, how do I include this and then become highly creative with what happened to me? That's the hero.
Absolutely. We have a choice. We can be a hero or a victim.
Yeah.
And I like the fact that you use the term empowerment. I believe in empowering individuals who need support from me on their grief journey and letting them know that your loss certainly is going to change, transform the way you look at the world, but there's other categories of your life that you need to celebrate, while still honoring the grief that will be forever present in some way, shape, or form. You know, I've learned that when I can experience days of yearnings for my loved ones, that the ability for me to feel and to be able to embrace my feelings wholly and completely is a gift of my journey. And before I wouldn't have said that, but we have to experience the breadth of our emotions if we are going to really empower ourselves to find our true authentic self.
Yeah. And there's a grieving of the event that actually took place. And there's also the grief of who I was before that event. And there's also a celebration because once you get to a certain point where you realize, oh, I expanded to include the event, doesn't mean the event was right or wrong for some people who have suffered the perpetration of others. But if you can expand to include the event, you become a different person. And that's kind of where it can get exciting if you want it to, in terms of like, am I bigger? Am I more self-expressed? Do I use my voice more? Are my boundaries really intact now? Do I negotiate what I want from where I want it, rather than a sort of fawning response to whoever's in the room? So there's all these light bulb moments of like, God, this gives me more power, actually. Which certainly happened to me.
Absolutely. And then we become, as I've mentioned on other podcasts, co-creators of our own destiny in conjunction with the universe. And that's the way it should be.
Yeah.
So let's get into your recent Sex and Sovereignty project. Tell our listeners more about the topic itself and how you're incorporating what you taught into your own coaching practice.
Sex and sovereignty, like, for starters, if you're going to have a course, call it something you can market, because I can't put that on the gram. But that's exactly what it is sex and sovereignty. So in order to become an empowered individual, like we're talking about, in order to include how we grew up, what we were taught about our bodies, what we were taught about relationship, events that were tricky. Maybe that's the first time you had intercourse, or maybe that's the first partner you ever had, or what you did since. You want to start to really define your own body and how it wants to work for you, but also you want to own your own body. So that's for me where sovereignty comes in. Sovereignty isn't something about anybody else, but you being in this stunning relationship with yourself, where you respect yourself, where you love yourself, where you have self-loyalty, where you have your yes and your no. I could go on further. And this is obviously really connected to the way you sexually occur with yourself. So you have a sexual relationship with yourself, not just about somebody else. And then with others from this empowered place, you get to negotiate relationships of your choice. And there's a lot of tidying up that needs to do for most people because we weren't taught enough about this stuff. And the gender roles around this are changing all the time right now. But for some of us, there weren't that many options on how we wanted to relate. And now we can start to relate from a much broader context.
Yeah. And, you know, we talked about this in the first episode, how sex is such a taboo topic. And, you know, two topics in Western society that don't get talked about enough are death and sex. I mean, yeah. And I've said this before, people are dying. As far as I know, people are still having sex or want to have sex. But yeah, we don't talk about it. It's like these two big elephants in the room. And
you and I deal with the elephants.
That's right. That's right. We deal with that all the time. And the more we talk about it, the more comfortable we become. And it takes the fear and mystery out of it. Because what we want to talk about are what probably other people are thinking anyway, but haven't had the courage to come forth with because of the taboo that's been placed on the subject of sex and sexuality. But that's a big part and a major part of who we are.
Yeah. So some of the things that come up in the sex part is, so this was, Sex and Sovereignty was a course I ran in 2024, and I will be running it again. I ran it just for non-male bodies because a lot of women tend to be quite performative in their sex because of the cultural upbringing. And they tend to feel guilty about having a sexual relationship with themselves that's just for themselves. So self-pleasure, masturbation, whatever you want to call it. There's also a lot of body shame that goes on for women. I would say all genders, but I was wanting to deal with a small portion of people so that it was easier to have one gender in the room or non-male bodies in the room. So shaming of the genitals takes place for women in a very particular way, to the point where sometimes they don't even know what's down there. And they haven't really given themselves permission to explore what's between their thighs. So there was a great ownership of that. Now, for me, that's kind of the fundamentals. Where we go into sort of next level, which is where my work really takes off, is once you've got those fundamentals of like, I have a sexual relationship with my own body, my body is mine. Level one. When you go further up, it's like, how do I want to use this amazing sexual energy that's sort of the essence of the whole of nature, if you like? How do I want to use that energy in my life? So for people with ovaries and wombs, for women, it's a very creative center. We can, if we co-create with someone, we can create babies, right? But this sexual energy also is so creative that you can give birth to ideas. You can give birth to projects, you can give birth to lifestyles. So the sovereign part is like letting myself realize what I want and then feeding it with my eros, which is so amazing. Now, once you start to feed your leadership with eros, stuff's going to come up. So within the course, which was, of course, filled with pretty empowered individuals, right? You have to be a bit brave to go, yeah, sex and sovereignty, count me in. Some of them were realizing, oh, in the workplace, even though I'm a really empowered woman and every best friend I know would say you're the most outspoken person in the workplace, one of the individuals was like, I don't stand up to my boss. I don't, when we're in a board meeting, I would let him talk first, even though I know that he's spouting nonsense. So you start to realize, oh, where I don't step into my leadership. So this movement towards leadership is great because you're likely to flourish. And the movement towards leadership is great because what's in the way of your bigger leadership, of you having your life how you'd like to have it, comes up as well. And we get to tweak that within the course.
Well, that sounds like a lot of fun, but it also sounds like in terms of once you get in touch with your body or you become comfortable with that, it also allows you to set healthy boundaries with those individuals. And you're like, you have more confidence. Because if you have more confidence in your body and how your body image is projected, it's going to lead to just more fruitful and probably more structured relationships where there are distinct boundaries in place. And I can imagine, Chloe, you work with a lot of women who also have had abuse histories, yeah. Whether it's sexual abuse and emotional abuse, and boundaries mm-hmm. become, or physical abuse as well. And mm-hmm. boundaries become blurred in those relationships. The power dynamics become skewed. Mm-hmm. The perpetrator holds all the power, and the victim doesn't hold any.
Yeah, that's where, like, for example, some of the client work that I've done recently, the ownership of the scenario that took something from you. So like you said, the perpetrator has all the power. We have to acknowledge that possibly they stole innocence. They stole the possibility for a period of time that person might see the gender of the perpetrator as danger forever. So a lot of what I worked around, and this is where I dance is so helpful as well, is there's hypervigilance where you have an unintegrated event. So your nervous system's always looking for danger. And then there's instinct where you have integrated events. And although sometimes pain is present, there's also a lot of joy and there's a sense of trust with oneself. So this sort of, is it safe? You know, is my environment safe? Are they safe? Becomes less relevant. So once you know you're safe with yourself, that's pretty juicy. And from there, you start to reclaim your sense of how you move through the world and you're not in a hypervigilant state and more people become relatable to without triggering any memories of a previous event.
And it makes sense if you feel safe with yourself, you're going to feel safe with others. And if we as coaches and clinicians can create a safe environment for individuals and a welcoming environment where rapport is established, that sense of self-safety is going to be facilitated a lot more quickly.
Yeah, it's a place, first of all, of recovery, because you've put a relationship with yourself in place. That's really key. And then it's a place of playfulness, which I think you would agree with me here, but I'm interested that there is a nature to life that is playful, that it's in there very high up on what wants to unfold in a lot of scenarios, like lack of seriousness. So when you're safe with yourself, yeah, you can take risks because you trust, you know, or you're backing out of the scenario as soon as you want to back out. Like, you know, bye. No excuse needed.
Yeah, and I think once you feel safe with yourself, you know the difference between healthy risk and unhealthy risk. Mm. Where before, if that safety wasn't in place, you don't know the difference. It's like, you jump into the pool before you take a look to see if there's any water in it.
Yeah. But
then when you get halfway down, you say, oh, crap, I should have looked first.
Yeah.
So doing it the way you do it, I think, allows us to help us understand what the difference is between healthy versus unhealthy risk.
Yeah. And lots of these answers are stored partially in our childhood and partially in our adulthood. So there's childhood trauma and adult trauma, and they have a slightly different impact. So in terms of parents teaching their children what a risk assessment is, brilliant piece of parenting. And I don't mean like, are there any sharp objects in the room? I mean more like when a child says, I don't feel good around this person, can we go and sit over there on the train or whatever, because there's somebody that we move, because you want that in place. You want that muscle memory of like, someone makes me uncomfortable, I move away. We don't gaslight that sense of healthy risk or unhealthy risk. And that gets practiced time and time again, hopefully, until like you walk in a room and you know immediately who you want to talk to and who you definitely wouldn't want to talk to.
Particularly with children, particularly between the ages of 3 and 7, they're highly intuitive and they're very energy sensitive. So if they're telling you a situation isn't safe, as a parent, as a guardian, we need to respect that and allow them to come to a point or go into an environment where they feel more safe.
Yeah.
So I know we started talking about the dance events that you have for women. I know you talked about some of the therapeutic benefits you've seen. Are there any other therapeutic benefits other than the ones that you've discussed that your clients have told you they've experienced as a result of the dance events they participated in?
Yeah, at the moment, I'm running a series called Body Song for Women, or for non-males. And it stemmed from an event I was running in London years ago that ballooned overnight, and that was the full moon dances for women. When I started it, I didn't know, is anyone going to come? And everyone came. The room was very full. We had to change venues. What was very apparent to me back then, which I hadn't realized until I saw it in the room as someone who's very somatically sensitive, I didn't think it was going to be that much different from a mixed gender space, which I was holding in other areas of my life at the time. But what women did and how they moved when there was no men present was incredible. You got more release. You got more wild. They were more willing to take some of the sweatshirts off and just dance in a vest, you know, and they made more sound. There was more generosity on the dance floor in terms of if somebody was moving with something tricky, somebody else could come closer without having to second guess what the relationship was. I don't know what the sexuality of the group was. The queer people felt very comfortable there, queer women, but also the heterosexual women weren't worried about the male gaze. Do I look sexy? Is people going to want me if I move like this? All of that went. So you got the raw, you got the ugly, you got the drooling. I mean, it was beautiful. So I recreated that within Body Song because, and step two happened. So women are very conditioned, and I would say a lot of men suffer from this as well. What do I look like? Will people love me? We're looking for this approval from the outside world. Social media has just turned the volume up on that. So I said, oh, we can all dance with cameras off if you want, which when you're space holding is a brave invitation because you want the feedback loop from the dance floor or the client, right? All the women on the call turn their cameras off. That is like, all right. So it shows you the need. I do not want to be seen, probably because I want to move exactly for me. I want to move exactly how my body moves. I don't want to worry about what I look like. I want to be weird. I want to be wonderful. I want to be myself. And as a space holder, which is less important, I was having to feel the field of the group as opposed to see it. So there was a massive sensory piece of information for me. And at the end of the call, all these sweaty, beautiful faces popped up on the screen at the end to tell me how it went. And not being worried about how they were being seen was really key. So that's massive for sort of a non-male space. And I expect the same for a male space. I expect massively different stuff happens. And I wonder also if you had like a non-binary space, but for a non-male space, it was enormous what happened. And people are thirsty to not worry about what they look like. And from that place, more freedom is available. And what I would invite is you do more of that in your own life. It's so attractive when someone is wholly themselves. That's how you get proper love.
Yep, it's a great way to show self-love, to be less conscious of how you look and how you are coming across to anybody. And I would believe as a woman, you don't feel like you're auditioning for a guy to say, yeah, look at me. You know, it's just about being in love with your body, being in love with movement, and just finding the joy of movement without any strings attached.
Yeah.
But I want to go down a rabbit hole with you. You know, we talked about this in...
See you, Dave. What then?
We talked about this prior to recording. Would the therapeutic effects you observed be different if the dance events were mixed gender in nature? So if you had male and female, what therapeutic effects would you expect would be different?
You mean like positively?
Positive, negative, wherever you want to go with that.
Yeah. First of all, like we wanna not assume that we know people's sexuality and how that. But yeah, are they pansexual? Are they heterosexual? Are they queer? Are they lesbian? Whatever it would be, they would be slightly different for each person in the group. You know, for some people, men are kind of invisible. Like some lesbians are just like couldn't really care less whether they're there or not. And other people. That I would say probably the heterosexual women might be the ones, if you have a nice past, for example, without trauma, the heterosexual women, they're gonna have the opportunity to dance through some of their stuff. Am I being seen? Do I notice I want to be liked? Do I not dance with women because men are present and I head towards a man, or do I do the opposite? So for me, dance floors, like conscious dance floors, or you know, non-performative dance floors, they're a great place to play. You can play with how close a body do I want the body near me, and why is that different from one person to the next? Do I let women very near me, or do I let men very near me, or do I let one person who feels kind of good because I know on some animal level that they wouldn't push my boundaries, whereas other people, I feel kind of like they're not listening to me, and they probably aren't. That would really validate that. So a mixed dance floor gives you completely different content to move with. And that little girl that never got attention from her dad is likely to turn up. And likewise, for the guys on the dance floor, what goes on for them? Are they needing to sort of compulsively seduce? Do they feel vulnerable, like they're going to get bossed around by the women? Do they feel like they have to act like an alpha when actually they'd rather cry and be very tender in their movement? So you get this whole different kind of catalyzed play going on. And hopefully for some people, it makes no difference. And they're just there to dance with themselves, this primary relationship with yourself, just happy with whoever's there.
And I would imagine they would have to feel really a sense of safety before they could just loosen a mixed gender group. One of the things that also crossed my mind is, if you had a woman who was in the early stages of dealing with the trauma of sexual abuse, you probably wouldn't want to put her in that stage in a mixed gender group.
No, she would want to go into the group of people who has a gender that didn't abuse her. That's her safest bet. Yeah.
Well, that was a fun rabbit hole to go down.
Well, I think we navigated it quite well.
I think we did too. And there's no rabbit hole that I won't go down if it's going to be of use and helpful to our listeners. So thanks for doing that with me. So, all right, let's talk about you as a coach. If a woman was to retain your services as a coach, what can they expect they're going to get from you, and what are your expectations for them?
I would be asking them what they desire. Now that seems like an easy question, right? But once you dig into it, what often comes up, they answer you and they tell you what they don't want. I'm really interested in what they do want. And that could be whether that's sexuality wise, like, I would really like to experience vaginal orgasms because I rely on my clitoris. Or it could be in a relationship. I'm very anxiously attached. I need a lot from my partner in terms of reassurance. And then I kind of go deeper, perhaps because of my age and everything that I've experienced in my life. You get contradictions in what women want. So a stunning woman came to me last year. She says, I want a relationship. And so we did some processes because I worked through the body and I worked through talking. And what became very apparent was that she was really, really scared of having a relationship. Relationship for her, when I asked that question, what does relationship mean to you? Immediately the memory of a very hard loss came up for her. So part of her wants a relationship. Part of her is guarding against any relationship because loss is going to occur. So I get to untangle those pieces. Now she's off in a relationship now because she digested that contradiction for herself. And you could use a similar example in most women that come my way. There'll be something stored in the body or in the nervous system that's getting in the way of what they desire. And I'm here to integrate that so that you get what you desire.
It sounds like a very cooperative and collaborative coach-client relationship.
Yeah. And there's room for everything. There's laughter, there's tears. It's a lot more playful. And I moved away. My background's in dance movement psychotherapy also. I moved away from psychotherapy because I wanted this heroine hero identity to blossom more. So we will go over the past and we will look at, you know, tell me what's there. But I want to know where it's stored in you, and I want to know whether or not it's consensual, you still want to carry that. you know, because for example, my mum left when I was about 5 or 6. Now I could have a narrative that I'm not good enough for the rest of my life if I want, but do I want that? No, I want to feel good enough in a relationship. I want to feel confident to ask for what I want. I don't want to be in a victim role for the whole of my life. So the embodiment stuff really starts as a coach, having me in your life. You get someone to celebrate your wins. You get someone to text and say, I'm just about to, and I just wanted to let you know. And there they go. Then they make the jump or they take the step or I didn't do it today and I really wanted to. And you have me in your corner saying, okay, right. I'm going to cheerlead you through this and we're going to do some processes that take you more into this area that you want to be moving into.
And it's important, and I align with you with this, that it's important that we understand our past, particularly early childhood experiences, which matter. And, a lot of times, if you have somebody who, like you, a parent left at a young age, you can help them look at that differently. You can help them see how that influenced their choices, good and bad, but it also, it's a part of their experience that they can't deny. They don't, because if they deny that, they're denying a part of their existence. But the other thing is that, and for me, I went through childhood abandonment issues after my father left when I was 5, which I think was about the same age your mom left. And 55 years later, I understood that my father left not because he didn't love me, but because he did. And it was the family history that was inextricably woven into his DNA that resulted in him not being able to stay in a traditional marriage. And once I understood that, I was able to forgive him for his actions.
Yeah, equally. You only need to look at my mother's childhood and her mother's childhood to understand why my mum wasn't able at that moment to stay. And then the story is not even about me anymore. Never was about me anyway. And forgiveness comes in. It's beautiful. I love your story, Dave.
Well, and likewise with yours too, Chloe, because it's about forgiveness. And, there's some areas of our life that we don't achieve forgiveness in at all, or maybe just a part of it. But when we can experience forgiveness wholeheartedly in an area of our life that has really dictated our present, it's just more empowering and it's more of a feeling of peace.
Yeah. And the word acceptance, first of all, is big on the path to forgive. If forgiveness feels like too big a word for the listeners out there, just accepting, yeah, that happened, is a really positive step towards like, and I can make good with myself now.
And I don't have to take the actions of my caregivers personally.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Light bulb moment.
Well, you got it. Well, one of my last questions for you today is if you could leave our listeners with one takeaway today, or a takeaway with subcategories, I'm good with that. What would that be?
A takeaway. Most people, even though they wouldn't notice it, lack self-loyalty and self-confidence. That thing that you want to do, or you want to have, or you want to say, what would happen? Like you could do this now whilst listening, right? What would happen if you tuned into yourself, maybe with your eyes closed, maybe not, and asked yourself the level of confidence that you have from 1 to 10, 10 being high? And you might notice, oh, I'm 6 out of 10 confidence. Intuitively, that's what kicks up for me. What would happen if you moved your level of confidence up to 7 and 8 or 9? And now, how do you feel about making that thing happen for yourself? As because we're when we move from that level of confidence, a lot more becomes possible. We can make robust risks or requests. We can take the move, make the movement. So a lot of our not doing comes from this lack of confidence, but it's a bit unseen. It's a bit unfelt underneath the surface. So my takeaway today is to have a little look at your confidence levels, like you would volume on the radio or the amp. Turn it up and then see if it's more possible now. And self-loyalty, most of us were taught to be more loyal to our environment or our caregivers or our others. If you were more self-loyal right now, what would you do? Like, it might just be stopping for the ice cream, right? Or it might be changing jobs. Lots of people change careers in my spaces because they're like, I never wanted to do this in the first place. And you up your self-loyalty and your world starts to change and you're in control of the way your world changes. You don't have to shelve it all tomorrow.
Absolutely. And I think once we're in control of how our world and how we want to impact our world and when our self-efficacy increases, I believe we're more prone and we're more liable to engage in service to others because we have served ourselves. We have honored that inner voice within us to say, this is the person I want to be.
Yeah.
And we can communicate a lot of what we've learned in terms of self-loyalty to individuals who are struggling with the same thing. So yeah, I think you're right. I think it starts with us.
Yeah. And then there's overflow. When you feel good with yourself, it's so much easier to be generous with other people. And you're not looking for a need to be met so much. Your needs are met within yourself a lot more. And then actually you're more likely to get into those relationships that really help you thrive as well. And you see the other and you're cheerleading them along and life feels good.
Yeah, it has a trickle-down effect all the way around when we take care of ourselves first.
Yeah, yeah. And the other takeaway is this thing, I feel like this happens. It probably does happen, but trusting your instinct in all areas, like if you're getting the ick about something, it's because something's off. Mm-hmm. Develop that muscle. It's a great muscle. I call it the bullshit radar. Trust your bullshit radar. It's my parting piece of advice.
I like that. My bullshit radar went up after my daughter transitioned. So there's very little that I would tolerate that individuals thought that, well, this was such a big crisis. Well, I said, well, this is just not even a blip on my radar. So my bullshit radar went up.
And yeah.
So, you know, and I think it's good to trust our instincts, trust when something doesn't sound right. And if we feel our safety is being compromised or we're just uncomfortable being in that situation, get the hell out.
Exactly. Yeah, make a change.
You got it. My last question for you. People want to contact you, find out more about your services, contract for your services. What's the best way for them to do that, Club?
www.feralgrace.net. Go to my website and from there you can book a free session with me. And we'll have fun.
And I would tell my listeners, if you're looking for an outstanding love, sexuality, relationship coach, go no further. Look in the UK, you'll find Chloe. And perhaps that could be the start of facilitating some really good international relationships between the United States and the UK, just if they contract for your services.
It's so true. I work with people all over the world and it's such a good feeling and it does improve relations. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And
you know, Dave, let's give everyone who's a non-male body, if they want a free ticket to Body Song, they can come to that because they mention your name or your show.
That sounds good. And I'll make sure all of that gets in the episode notes when this drops on YouTube and on my other podcast platform. So, Chloe, with that, as always, it's just a blast talking with you. We got to do a part three.
Yeah, we've got it planned. We'll be back.
Yeah, definitely we'll be back. Sometime in the fall or maybe early winter, we'll come with part three. And we'll promise to be, I think, just as fulfilling and as interesting a conversation as I believe the first two have been between us. So
I'm looking forward to it, Dave. Thanks so much. You rock.
So do you, Chloe. And with that, that's a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, wishing you peace.